Welcome to Lectionary at Lunch at Concordia Seminary. Today we are doing the text for the second Sunday after the Epiphany, and the Old Testament reading is the calling of Samuel to be a priest, the calling through the prophetic hearing of God's Word there beside the Ark of God in 1 Samuel chapter 3. So the pericope is 1 Samuel 3 verses 1 through 10. Now, this is a familiar story to most of the people who have been raised in the church. It's a familiar Sunday school story where the boy Samuel is called. And the story, as it's taught in Sunday school, is very much like the pericope, the way that the pericope is cut off for us, verses 1 through 10. In other words, it's a very nice and uplifting story. It's kind of a fun story to listen to, the way that Samuel keeps running to Eli and this confusion over who's talking to me, and then he realizes that it's the word of the Lord, and it ends on this very wonderful note with Samuel saying, "Speak, for your servant is listening." And this picture of obedient hearing and of God's word graciously coming to the boy Samuel. What verses 1 through 10 fail to capture, however, that's in the wider context, is the way in which the call of Samuel takes place as the edge of God's rejection of Eli and his sons as priests before his ark there at Shiloh. So the context for the story here is important. And in the book of 1 Samuel, it opens up with the story of Hannah, who is childless, and the birth of Samuel in answer to her prayers. And Samuel's birth and his being dedicated to the Lord to serve there at Shiloh, at the Ark of God, is followed by God's rebuke against Eli because of the disobedience of Eli's sons. And he promises that he is going to cut off every man from the house of Eli in chapter 2. He says, "For those who honor me, I will honor, but he who disdains me shall be lightly esteemed or cursed," from the Kalal. That's 1 Samuel 2, verse 30. Right after our pericope, verses 1 through 10, in chapter 3, verse 13, we're told, Samuel is told from God that Eli's house is being rejected because Eli's sons have lightly esteemed God. They have kalaled God. Instead of Eli and his sons, we're told at the end of chapter 2, "God will raise up for myself a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and mind." Chapter 2, verse 35. So this is the promise that leads into this chapter, verse 3. God is going to raise up for himself a new line of priestly service, a new faithful priest who will do according to what's in God's own heart and mind. It echoes a little bit the language of his pleasure with David. David is a man after his own heart in terms of God-pleasing kingship. So this pericope, the call of Samuel, it's preceded by this rejection of Eli's house, and then, as I said, it is also not only followed by, but the oracle echoing judgment against Eli's house is actually part of this pericope. It's just not read in the church. The content of what God actually says to Samuel is going to be, "I am going to do something which is going to cause the ears of all who hear it to tingle. I really am going to carry out the judgment that I spoke against Eli." So the contrast throughout here that we want to note is the contrast between Eli and his line and Samuel as the new one being called as God's faithful priest. Let's jump into the text then. Verse 1. Vahana'ar Shemuel Masharet et Yahweh lifnei Eli. Udever Yahweh Hayah Yakar Bayamim Hahem Ein Chazon Nifratz. It begins with a disjunctive vav, and it's kind of setting the stage for the pericope here. It begins with a vav plus a non-verb at the beginning of a clause, something like "now," we might say. Now, the boy Samuel, first two nouns are in apposition to one another, the boy Samuel, and then this PL participle, was ministering from Sherat, was ministering direct object Yahweh, or was serving Yahweh, lifnei Eli, before Eli. Ministers are typically devoted to a superior. Those who sherat are usually an inferior, serving a superior. Joshua sheratted Moses famously in the end of Deuteronomy. Also, Elisha had a servant who charotted him. Also, this verb has to do oftentimes with priestly service. So in the Pentateuch, as the duties of the Levites and the priests are laid out, you come across this root quite a bit. This is clearly priestly language. Chapter 2 has already mentioned twice that Samuel is charotting there at Shiloh. Just after Hannah's song, the narrator says that Elkanah went home and Samuel charotted Yahweh in the presence of the face of Eli. And then also the text says that Samuel charotted the face of Yahweh wrapped in a linen ephod. And this too is a very priestly image. So even before this call in chapter 3, we've had Samuel portrayed in very priestly terms. Only the priests wear the linen ephod. The only exception to that is David dancing before the Ark of the Lord when it was brought up to Jerusalem in a linen ephod. And that's notable because it is so unusual for anyone but a priest to wear the linen ephod. So the boy Samuel was ministering to Yahweh, serving Yahweh in the presence of or before Eli. Second line of the second half of verse 1. Another disjunctive vav, so we continue this background information. And the word of Yahweh was yakar in those days, bayamim hahem. The word of Yahweh was yakar, rare or precious. That can mean expensive, but here in this context, the sense is it was not common, in other words. It was not plentiful, it was rare. Ein chazon nifratz. There was not a vision, and then this nifal participle of paratz. Paratz is a common verb meaning something like to break out or to burst forth. But here in the nifal, it's a little strange what it might mean. Usually, the English versions render it as something like widespread or frequent or open. And you can kind of, I guess, get a widespread out of bursting out. There was not vision being burst out or something like that. The nifal participle really acts like an adjective here. And kazon may, probably in English we would make that a plural, treat it as a collective. There were not widespread visions in those days. Kazon as a word in the Hebrew Bible is actually pretty rare in 1 Samuel, and actually it's pretty rare from Genesis all the way through 1 Samuel. It's really a later term in prophecy, and this is kind of apparently a later perspective back looking on these days. Verse 2. Have the beautiful sound of St. Louis helicopters flying outside the window. Little local color for our story of Shiloh. Verse 2. Vayhi bayom hahu, and it happened in that day, v'eli shokev bimkomo, that Eli was lying, the participle of shakav, in his place, in his makom. Now this is interesting language here. It might just be a throwaway detail. It might just mean Eli is lying where he normally lies at night. But we're going to find in a little bit that Samuel is lying in a different place. And it's interesting what Samuel's location, physical location there at the tabernacle is and what Eli's is. It says something theologically at this point. And Eli was lying in his place. Now another disjunctive vav. Now his eyes, the kere reading here in the text makes eyes plural, his eyes plural, to match the plural verb which follows it. His eyes, he chelu, kehot, lo you call lirot. His eyes had begun. The hifil of kalal means to begin something. It's oftentimes followed by an infinitive. So the word which follows, kehot, you notice that ot ending. It could be a feminine plural adjective, and it's actually pointed as an adjective with that initial sere, which means something like dim or weak. But it could also be the infinitive construct of the root kaha, a third hey verb, and that's probably how we should read this after the hifil of kalal, began to. So his eyes had begun to dim. Take krehot as the infinitive construct of kaha, to dim. His eyes had begun to dim. Lo, you call, lirot. He was not able, from yakal, he was not able, infinitive of ra'ah, to see. Now this, it might just be, again, kind of a throwaway adjective or just a chance adjective that he chooses this kaha here, to dim. But it's interesting that in Samuel's vision that he's going to receive from God, in the God's words, I should say, that he's going to receive here after this pericope, in verse 13, God rebukes Eli because his sons have been blaspheming God, his sons have been treating God lightly, and he did not restrain them. And there the verb is kaha, it's the PL form of kaha. So it's an interesting connection here as this verb, it's a fairly rare verb, it occurs just 13 times in the Old Testament, twice in this pericope, and it's interesting that his eyes growing weak and his failure to restrain his sons is maybe a play on words here, that he's intentionally blind, in other words. He's willfully blind, he's culpably blind to the things that are going on. Verse 3. We have this language of blindness and not being able to see with Eli, and now in verse 3, another disjunctive of, still more background information, V'ner Elohim terem yikbeh. The lamp of God, ner means lamp, one of the tabernacle lamps. The lamp of God, terem is an adverb, not yet, and kava in the call here means to be extinguished or quenched. So, now the lamp of God had not yet been extinguished, or was not yet, had not yet gone out. Ushmuel shokave, and Samuel was lying. So it's this parallel to Eli's lying, but notice where Samuel is lying. Behekal Yahweh, asher sham aron Elohim. In the temple of Yahweh, where the ark of God was. Oftentimes when Sham follows Asher, whether it follows immediately after Asher or at the very tail end of the relative clause, you oftentimes translate Asher as where. So where the Ark of God was. It's interesting, while Eli is in blindness, Samuel is where the lamp of God is still shining. And oftentimes commentators note that this is really a kind of a temporal expression. The lamp of God had not yet gone out. They would light the lamps in the evening, and in morning they would let them extinguish, apparently. And so on the one hand, we're just saying it's nighttime and it's still dark outside. But I think that read in contrast with Eli and his blindness, this is saying something more than that. Samuel is lying where the ark of God had not yet been, or the lamp of God had not yet been extinguished. Maybe reading even a little more into it, this idea that God has entrusted his saving work in Israel's midst, his atoning work, his communicating work with his people, his speaking work, to the priesthood at this time, and especially to Eli and his sons, and they are, in a sense, kind of burning out. And yet, not yet. God's work in that regard is not yet extinguished, and God is in the very process, in fact, of raising up a new, you might say, a new lamp in Israel, a new line of priestly service. So the Ark of God was not yet extinguished because Samuel is lying in the temple of Yahweh, where the Ark of God was. This word for temple here, interestingly, heikal, is not usually used of just the tabernacle. It's used of the later temple in Jerusalem. And also some of the other language from chapter 2, where it talks about Eli sitting by the doorposts there at Shiloh, suggests, and some scholars think, that perhaps as the tabernacle was stationed at Shiloh, they actually built some kind of a structure for it. So there actually was some kind of a temple built that where the tabernacle was there in that place. It's, you might say, the first place that God causes his name to dwell in the land before he eventually chooses Jerusalem. All right, verse 4. With verse 4, the Hebrew gets pretty easy to deal with and the narrative starts moving pretty quickly. Vayikra Yahweh el Shmuel vayomer hineni. And God called to Samuel And he said, Samuel did, Hineni, behold me, or usually translated, here I am. It's the response usually to a summons. It's probably worth noting here that before Samuel goes running to ask Eli, why did you call me, he first responds, Hineni. Is it reading too much into the narrative to suggest then that this is a near voice that he's hearing? He's hearing a voice that's very near to him. Maybe he assumes it's Eli, but he assumes that Eli is standing right there. So he hears Samuel and he answers, here I am. And then there's no one there. So then, verse 5, Vayarat el Eli, Vayomer hineni, ki karata li. And he ran, that first verb there, Vayarat, is from the hollow roots. And he ran to Eli, and he said, Hineni, behold me, here I am, for you called to me. Here, the second person, masculine, singular, perfect of kara, for you called li to me. Vayomer lo karati, and he said, Eli now, and he said, I didn't call. Shuv shikav, it's kind of a nice little sound play there. Shuv shikav, two imperatives. Return, lie down. Vayelek vayishkav. And he went, from halak, and he lay down. Okay, verse 6 begins with another vav consecutive imperfect. Now we're in the main storyline of the action. We've had a number of vav consecutive imperfects, so the narrator here is no longer been giving us background information since the beginning of verse 4. Vayosef Yahweh kara'od Shemuel. And Yahweh added, here we have the hithiel vav consecutive from Yasaf. Yasaf means to add or increase, but oftentimes is used idiomatically with an infinitive following to mean, and Yahweh continued or did something again. And here with ode after the infinitive, it makes it clear that the sense here is again. Karo is the infinitive construct of kara, so very woodenly, and Yahweh added to call again, which is the Hebrew way of saying, and Yahweh called again, Shemuel. So this is a quote now. Samuel, it's what Yahweh called. Vayakam Shemuel, Vayelek El Eli. And Samuel arose from the hall of Rakum, and he went from Halak to Eli, Vayomer hineni kikarati li. And he said, here I am, for you called to me. Vayomer lo karati bani shuv shikav. And he said, Eli now again, I did not kara, I did not call. And notice what he calls Samuel here, bani. This vocative. I did not call my son. Shuv shikav, again he says. Go and lie down. I really like this detail here of bani in Samuel's speech here, or in Eli's speech, I should say. Eli is really a tragic figure in these opening chapters of Samuel, and it's and I think in these verses he is portrayed somewhat sympathetically. He ends up being the one who gives good advice here in a couple of verses to Samuel to listen to the Lord. And here he speaks to Samuel as my son, Bani. Also significant perhaps because in a sense, though Eli's line is being rejected because of his sons, in a little different sense, kind of a personal sense, his son is still continuing the priesthood because Samuel has become, in a sense, Eli's son. So, I did not call to you, my son. Return, lie down. Verse 7. Ushemuel terem yada et Yahweh, v'terem yigale elav devar Yahweh. Now another parenthetical or background statement here with a disjunctive vav at the beginning. Now Samuel, and here again we see this adverb terem, it's twice in this verse, not yet. Now Samuel didn't yet know, from yada, did not yet know, direct object, Yahweh. Now, what kind of a statement is that? Samuel did not yet know Yahweh. Well, the next verse is going to clarify what that, or the next half of the verse clarifies that. And not yet was being revealed. Here we have the niphal Notice the dagesh in the gimel and the comments underneath, which marks it as a niphal. The niphal of Galah is to be revealed. So, and it had not yet been revealed, Elav, to him, and now we get the subject of the verb, the Devar Yahweh. The word of Yahweh had not yet been revealed to him. Now this goes back to the first verse of this pericope, which said that the Devar Yahweh was rare in those days. So the point isn't that he'd never heard of Yahweh or that he didn't have a personal relationship with Yahweh or something like that. The point is, as a priestly prophet serving at the Ark here, he had not yet been encountered by a direct visitation or speaking of the Devar Yahweh. He didn't have that kind of knowledge. Yadah in the very intimate knowing sense. Verse 8. Vayosef Yahweh karo Shemuel ba shalishit. And the same construction from verse 6. And Yahweh added to call Samuel. In other words, and Yahweh called Samuel again ba shalishit, a third time. A temporal bait on the front of shalishit. Vayakam vayelek el Eli, and he arose again from Kum, and he went to Eli. Vayomer hineni kikarata li. This just keeps happening over and over again. This is the third exact repetition of this encounter. And he said, here I am, for you called to me. And now it changes. Vayavain Eli. This is from the Halarut Bean. It's a hifil form. It means to understand or perceive. And Eli understood, and Eli perceived, ki Yahweh kore lana'ar, that Yahweh was calling to the lad. Another participle form there of kara. Vayomer Eli l'Shemuel, lake Shekav. Okay, so the instructions are similar again. And Eli said to Samuel, go, from Halak, lie down. But now it's different. V'haya im yikra elika, and it will be if or when, im here begins a circumstantial clause, and it will be when he shall call to you. He doesn't give the subject here. He just says, and it will be when he shall call to you. V'amarta, you shall say. Here the main clause after the circumstantial clause is introduced by the vav, even though we don't translate it. You shall say, Daber Yahweh. This is the imperative form of davar, PL imperative. Speak, O Yahweh, kishomea avdeka, for listening is your servant, for your servant is listening. Vayelek Shemuel vayishkav bim komo. And Samuel returned, and he lie down, and again this emphasis on in his place, there beside the ark of God. Vayavo Yahweh vayit yatsav. Really strong incarnational language here. And Yahweh came and he stood. This is the kind of language, this is what the Israelites do at Mount Sinai. They come out and stand before the Lord. And this is what Yahweh is pictured doing in just a couple of very strong revelatory places in the Old Testament. He takes his stand. He's actually perhaps present and even visible. We have the language of chazon, vision, that kind of prefaced this pericope. It gave us an anticipation that there would be an appearance of vision. And Yahweh came and he took his stand. Yatsav here in the Hith Pael is a. It often occurs in the Hith Pael to take one's place, to take one's stand. Vayikra kapa'am bapa'am, and he called like time in time, like occurrence in occurrence. It's just an idiom of saying as he had the other times, like this time as the other times. So just as he's been doing all through the night, he once again says. Shemuel, Shemuel, Samuel, Samuel, a double call, echoing the call of Moses at the burning bush. Shemuel, Shemuel, Vayomer, Shemuel, Daber, Ki, Shomea, Avdeka. And Samuel said, speak, for your servant is listening. All right, what do we do with all of this? Well, our time is about up, so that gets me off the hook from having to reflect too deeply on this. But the gospel reading is going to be from John on the calling of the disciples. And it's interesting, the literary links between this Old Testament reading and the Gospel reading from John are pretty weak in terms of vocabulary or really direct themes. Even the one occurrence of called in John 1 refers to Philip calling Nathanael rather than God calling someone. And this uses phoneo rather than koleo, which the Septuagint translation of this passage has koleo all over the place, always for kara. But theologically, there are a number of ties between the passages. First of all, the call of Samuel represents the continuation, despite human depravity, despite all of the ugliness of what's going on with Eli and especially his sons, the continuation of Yahweh's gracious intention to bless his people. And this is seen in its most beautiful and full form when God finally raises up the perfect priest. This passage is a passage of God raising up one who will finally be a faithful priest rather than Eli and his sons before the ark. But in Christ, he really raises up the great priest prophet to be a faithful priest who will act according to God's own heart and mind, like he talks about leading into Samuel here. And you see the joy of the disciples in John 1. We have finally found the one. We have found the one that Moses and the prophets wrote about. This idea that in spite of all of Israel's vicissitudes, God is going to do his blessing work through the institutions that he's appointed. Samuel's service is priestly and prophetic, and we could there's a lot of connections with Moses here. We could draw a lot of connections with Christ and with his disciples as well, but I'll leave that to your imagination and to our gospel reading here.